Okay, Amy?
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have used your name with the recording. I want you to understand that the recording and anything that I jot down will be completely confidential. If you want, I can restart the recording because I said your name in the beginning.
I'm probably not too concerned.
Okay. I also want to let you know, I know this was sent in an email, that this study has been approved by the Institutional Review Board at Buffalo State College.
Okay.
Please keep in mind, if there's any question that you're not comfortable in answering, you are free to decline to answer that.
Okay.
There's the risks to your participation are no greater than you would experience day to day. However, the potential benefits from this study will hopefully help you improve, will help everyone, I guess, in statistics improve the understanding of how to use fun in teaching statistics. And keep in mind, everything will be completely confidential. Any notes that I keep will not have your name on it. It will be in a secure location, and no identifying information about you will be in any kind of paper that we write.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Is that okay with you?
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions. Most of this is just background stuff in the beginning, just to see about you and your institution.
Okay.
Could you describe a typical student in your statistics class? Well, first, actually, what type of statistics class do you teach?
I teach any statistics class ranging from freshman level introductory statistics up to graduate level statistics courses. We do have a master's program in statistics at my institution.
Okay. Let's first start with the intro, the freshman intro to this statistics course. What kind of typical student is in that course with respect to age, ability, their interests, majors, that kind of thing?
Okay. Depending on which course I teach, one section that I tend to teach a lot has a lot of education majors or secondary pre-service teachers in the population. The age range is not necessarily your traditional college age. I have a good significant number of older students, maybe in their 30s or 40s. And a majority in that class would be female, actually. The other introductory course I teach is for pre-med majors, and that tends to be more traditional age students, a few non-traditional older students, and pretty equally split between male and female. Another distinguishing characteristic of all of my classes at the university, except for maybe the graduate courses, is that for, I would say, at least over half of my students, English is their second language.
Oh, okay. So you teach, you said, a freshman, that's your freshman intro. Just one question about the education majors. Are they elementary, middle, high school?
Any of those. A majority are elementary. I would estimate maybe like 70% are elementary, and then the rest would be junior high or high school, which we just would uniformly call secondary here.
Okay. Now then, I guess you teach additional statistics course for, I guess, mathematics or science majors that are later on in the undergraduate?
I do teach a junior level probability and statistics class for computer scientists that does have junior and seniors in computer science in it. And that tends to be a whole different population. It's fairly young and almost all male, one or two females out of 40 to 50 students typically.
Okay. For those classes, is, what's a typical class size?
No smaller than 30, and up to, one of them is online, and I had 60 in that class.
Then can you just give me a brief discussion of the graduate level statistics?
Those would be typically older students. They're all graduate students. Let's see. The ones I tend to teach will be small, not over 15 students in the course. One of them is a statistical programming course that I teach, and it is almost all either statistics students or we have a bioinformatics program as well, and a lot of those students take the course. A few computational science graduate students also attend the course. And pretty evenly split between males and females, generally, in that course. Another one I teach is Introduction to Biostatistics. It has some statistics students and some bioinformatics students and a lot of students from health sciences. So people getting their PhDs in nursing or physical therapy or something health related. And those tend to be older students in general. I would say over 30, most of the students in that class.
Okay. Anything else that you think that would be important for, you know, a distinguishing idea factor among those classes?
The only thing that I'd say is in my undergrad classes, I do tend to concentrate a lot on the language ability and teach my courses being aware of their the fact that they're going to have certain misunderstandings that come up due to language quite often, and I tend not to concentrate on that in my graduate level courses because that's not as much of a factor.
Okay.
In the graduate level courses.
Now, so you had told me that the undergraduate are, especially the freshmen, is a majority of them have English as a second language.
Mm-hmm.
Is that similar to your graduate level?
There are a lot of students who speak English as their second language, too, in there, but they're from a variety of different countries. We have a lot of students from China and India and other countries. And my undergrads are uniformly Spanish-speaking, either from the southeastern United States or from Mexico.
Okay. Okay, so my next question is regarding the use of fun in the statistics classroom. I'm not sure how we can do this since you teach so many classes, so maybe we can just go from the freshman intro, then to the upper level undergraduate, and then maybe the graduate level and see if there's a difference. If there's not a difference, you can just say, I do this typically in all or none of the classes. We have different categories of types of fun, and I'm just going to go through those lists and have you respond and see if you've tried any of these kind of categories. The first category is poems or songs. Have you tried any of those in any of those courses?
I have never done either listening to a poem or listening to a song. I'm assuming not necessarily doing that myself. I have not ever used a song or a poem in class. I have had a student who referred me to some music that he found on the internet that was, I think it was called Statistically Significant Christmas Tunes or something like that, and I pointed them out in class, but that was the extent of what I did after he had sent me an email about them.
Okay. So next category would be cartoons.
Yes, I have used cartoons in class, and whenever I come across cartoons that are relevant to a topic I teach, I save it and put it with my notes for those topics and try to show it to them and talk about the relevancy and everything. I started doing that a long time ago when I was a grad student because my office mate had that cartoon guide to statistics, so I was always using that in class. But now I've found, I think, even better cartoon sources. So.
Okay. And do you use that equally among all the three different levels of courses that you teach?
I'd say so. With cartoons, I would. I wouldn't say I use all the sources of fun equally among, like, graduate versus undergrad, but with that, I do.
Okay. And we're going to come back to these and look at their use and how you use them, but let's go through the next one. It's called games. Do you use any kind of games in your teaching of statistics?
Yes, I have done them just for individual activities in class. However, I'm trying something new this semester with the undergraduate courses that I'm teaching, where actually the whole course is kind of a big game competition in a sense, where I have outside of class questions that have to do with the material that we'll cover that week in class that they have to look at and allocate points to what they think the correct answers are. So it's kind of a little bit like gambling a little because they have maybe 15 points on a problem and they're maybe not sure about which is the answer. So maybe they think it could be A or C, and so they put maybe 10 points on A and 5 points on C because they're pretty, you know, maybe a little bit more sure it's A than C. And then we're having a competition throughout the semester about who can retain the greater percentage of their points throughout the semester. And then I'm also having them do that as groups to see if they can do a better job working as a group in terms of retaining points also. And so I'm doing that this semester. The prize is not going to be great, and they all know that, but most students seem to enjoy it and aren't really blowing off the questions. And it's really getting me to be able to know what they're getting and not getting before I start off that class period, kind of know what to focus on in class and what they seem to all get without even me talking about the material yet in class.
Right. Okay. The next one is jokes and humor. Do you use that?
Yes, pretty much all the time. I mean, I try to, when we talk about things, I try to bring up funny scenarios of, you know, if I'm talking about research design, funny things that have happened that I've heard about with regard to research design, or I probably use a lot of self-deprecating humor in class, too. So they seem to enjoy that most of all.
Okay. Yes, I get the same thing in my class.
Yeah.
Do you use that throughout all the different levels that you teach?
That's a good question. But I'd say uniformly across the undergrad, yes. I do use, particularly, you know, if I'm teaching a graduate level, say, experimental design class, or in the biostats, we talk a lot about experimental design since that's very applicable for them. And I try to come up with humorous scenarios for teaching all the different types of designs, or else it becomes just dreadfully boring, you know.
Right.
Fractional, factorial, blah, 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 you know, all the different designs. So I try to use humor in that. I would say maybe that I tend to be a little bit more serious, only because the students tend to be a little bit more serious in the graduate level course. So maybe I kind of feed off of that seriousness from them a little bit because they're very focused and determined, and the undergrads are a little bit more apt to be laid back in class.
Right.
so on.
Okay. Let's go back to the cartoons, and you said you collected them over, you know, time, and you used them. The next question I'm going to have with respect to that is, where do you use them? Do you use them in a lecture setting or more of a discussion setting? Meaning, do you just say, here's this cartoon, they read it, and then you move on discussing it, or you put it up there and have the students see what they, you know, discuss what they think that means?
I've done that a couple of times where I felt like the meaning of the cartoon was a little bit harder to understand. Sometimes the cartoons are very evident and there's really hardly any interpretation needed. But sometimes it's a little bit more nuanced, the humor of it. And so I've done that a couple of times, two times I can think of, where I had them get in, we they have their usual discussion groups and get in discussion groups and, you know, why is this funny here? That kind of a thing. And that helps them, I think, to understand it better, because I felt like I don't want to get up and it's not a good joke if you have to tell them what's funny about it, you know.
Right.
So.
Right. Do you use those cartoons more with the basic material? Or do you use it for more advanced material, or do you use it equally among both of those types?
I would say I probably use it a little bit more with the big ideas and introducing, you know, the big ideas of, you know, what's a hypothesis test and issues like that. Although I do have a couple of funny cartoons that kind of make fun of people who don't do multiplicity corrections and the types of results that we can get when we don't control for multiplicity. And that's, you know, something I would only really touch on towards the end of a course that's introductory or in a graduate level course.
Right. Okay. I forgot to ask about the online class. Do you use these kind of categories of fun with the online class also?
Yes, and in fact, I kind of intentionally probably injected even more into the online class just because, you know, it has the potential of even being more dull than your usual class. So, as a way to kind of hold their attention, I probably put a lot of material even interjected within the course notes and had them go view funny YouTube videos and things like that more often, just because I knew I wasn't going to be there to put that in when I felt the students were starting to lose concentration and so on. I do it probably in that class. I mean, it goes along with the content of the course, but also just to give them breaks between reading and doing problems and all the stuff, because it can get really long in an online course, working by yourself.
Right. Now, that would be for the jokes and the humors. Now, when you said YouTube videos, are they still humors or are they actually songs?
They were actually some. One I can think of right now was a mock newscast that was making fun of how people evaluate research studies. You know, the idea that, you know, causation or correlation doesn't imply causation and making all these big claims about kind of ridiculous results and things like that. And then they're supposed to get on their discussion boards and talk about what was the newscaster doing wrong in his interpretation of the studies and how were they off base and so on. And one of them was, in my mind, humorous. It was a very, on the same note of finding flaws in studies, I gave them this very alarmist video that was out there that was supposed to be serious. And I thought it was very funny when I saw it because they made so many of the usual mistakes that we had been talking about in the class. Right. And unfortunately, I have to say a lot of the students took it quite seriously, and I had to go in there and really redirect them and to really find and focus on the flaws of the video rather than take it as a serious research study.
Wow. Okay. So that brings me to an interesting question then. Obviously some of these work better than others.
Yeah.
So you've recognized that one video that maybe you had to go in and redirect.
Mm-hmm.
What about some of, and you've already suggested that for some of the more nuanced cartoons that you have to have them have a discussion to see where that humor lies. So do some of these work better in some settings than in other settings?
Well, I think the students have to be open to it and to being relaxed enough to have fun in class. And I've had that problem before, honestly, with some graduate level courses where I realized the students were just a little bit too serious fun in class.
Right.
And that kind of annoys me as an instructor because I like to have fun in my class. But I kind of had to roll with it because I can't really change who they are. But I tried to, be relaxed myself. I don't know if I'm answering the question. I probably got off track a little bit. But,
no, that's fine.
I kind of sometimes even just watch and see. Sometimes I'll introduce something to students, and I can tell they're not getting it. And so then I'll take a step back and try something different with them.
Other than knowing that the graduate-level students are more serious, which is why some of that stuff might not work, are there other reasons why, other than, again, let me repeat, let me just step back. You've suggested that the graduate-level students are sometimes more serious,
mm-hmm.
and that sometimes the cartoons are more nuanced. Are there mm-hmm. other cases in which a cartoon or a game doesn't necessarily work, other than those two?
All I can think of is with the nuanced cartoons, I had one where I really had to end up explaining it to the class because it was probably just too high level of a cartoon for that particular undergrad class. The conclusion was not obvious to them, the fun of it, and didn't really. My objective is never to have to explain it, and so I ended up explaining it, which never goes well to have to explain it. But that's all I can think of.
Okay. For the cartoons, how often, you said you have a collection of them, so how often do you use those in your classes?
I've probably a little bit less, actually, than I used to because I started using more video clips now, which kind of has decreased my use of cartoons, actually. So I don't know. I'd say once or twice a month I use it, a cartoon specifically.
And how often do you use a video then?
A video, I actually try to use, I probably use them more often. Once every couple weeks I'll use a video in class.
Okay.
And it would be a short video clip, 1 minute, 2 minutes, something like that.
And that was another question I was going to ask is how long do, when you present either a cartoon or the video, how often is the presentation of that And then how long does it take for the class discussion, if there is any, on that?
Well, usually either of those, the presentation would be short, 1-2 minutes. So it never, you know, takes much time. However, I have one video clip that I always use for introducing probability to the students because it covers such a wide variety of issues and misconceptions with regard to probability. And we talk about it throughout the whole chapter. So
okay.
We watch it one time, and then I say, oh, and remember in the video when the guy said this, you know, that relates to the law of large numbers and so on. And so we talk about it all the time, but it just, we've had the one viewing of it in class.
Correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like as I'm listening to you that you use a lot of this stuff initially before the concept is discussed by you.
Yeah, I do. That's true. I use it as kind of a way to get them engaged and bring them into the material and thinking about issues that are maybe hard to think about.
Okay. Whereas something to think more deeply, for example, like all the misconceptions that you were talking about in the probability, to keep them in mind as
you
go through and discuss the concepts.
Yeah, like the video I use really addresses that misconception of, you know, if you've got 100 flips of a coin, what's the probability of, and all the flips are heads, what's the probability of your 101st flip being heads or tails? And really gets them thinking about those issues of independence and so on. And those are often kind of hard to, those misconceptions that are kind of built into their heads are kind of hard to uncover otherwise, I've found. They still tend to think in their old ways.
So you think that this use of a video helps more efficiently to create a problem within the student's thinking so they can address that misconception they have and change their thinking?
Yeah, I think it makes them aware that they even have that misconception, because I don't think without the video, I know in the past not using the video, I think many students had left my class still having that misconception of with regard to independence of random events and how it relates, you know, to the law of large numbers, so short run, long run, and so on. And I think the video kind of helps them realize, oh, maybe what I would have first thought isn't right, you know, in terms of their intuition.
Is that a similar thing that you see when you use the cartoon with the students? Does it not necessarily with misconceptions, but does it help their conceptions of the material more effectively than
some of them do? There's one I've always used for lower level undergrads from the Cartoon Guide to Statistics that I think really nicely helps them understand the meaning behind hypothesis tests. They understand the problem, they understand the context, and they can really get the idea of, you know, providing empirical evidence for or against something and the probability of something being so small that we doubt it is true. And they really get it in that context, and they seem to be able to get that idea translated into, you know, the hypothesis test.
Okay. Let's see. You suggest, I said earlier that you don't really use poems and songs. You did one time when a student told you about the statistically significant Christmas songs. Are you open to trying poems or songs?
Yeah, I'm open. I guess I've just never, I know of some statistics songs that would be fun to try. I've never really had them, like I've never come across a resource of a recording or something like that I could play. And I'm sure it's out there. I just haven't looked for it and haven't happened to come across it.
Right. So I imagine just having not having a quick resource to find that? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, an easy place to go and find that stuff. I'd probably be apt to use it if I really thought it would help the students understand something better. That's always what I think when I look at something like fun. It's good to have something fun in class, and sometimes I do really use it just as an attention grabber. But generally, with something that may take a while, I really think, is this really going to help them understand it? And so if I decided it would, then I'd probably use it if there was an easy way for me to get it.
Okay.
And there may be that I just don't know about.
Right. I'm just reading through these questions. Some of them we've already addressed as in the beginning. So I'm just looking through my interview protocol here. Trying to think. Can you provide any additional information about your hesitations that prevent you from, say, using either, I guess, a particular item of, like, a cartoon or a game, or what would be a particular hesitation concerning the poems or songs, something that you haven't used?
I'd say in general, with some maybe games, I've maybe in the past not used them only because I was really pressed for time, and I know that's probably a really poor excuse, but I felt pressure to get through material quickly, and it's just easier not to do that, honestly. And so when given the time, I'd be happy to often use something like that, but if it's right before I have to give an exam and I have to get that material covered before the exam, it presents a difficult way to fit it in sometimes. Then I guess one of the main reasons I've never used song is just I don't know that I necessarily feel comfortable maybe leading a song in front of my class. I'd maybe be worried about them thinking it was too goofy or I wouldn't necessarily, if I had a recording, I'd feel better about it, but I certainly wouldn't want to be the song leader or anything like that. So that would be my main hesitation with something like that. I really don't have any hesitations with regard to a poem. I've just never really come across anything that I thought was useful. And that's a poem. So.
Right. Trying to think. Yeah, I think we've addressed everything in the interview protocol. I just have one last question.
Sure.
Is can you provide any additional information about the motivations you have in using these activities? And I think we've addressed that, but I just want to make sure that that's clarified here.
Yeah, I would say I have a few. One of them is just like an attention grabber for my students to keep them engaged in class and involved, and games are great for that because students love games. As a teaching tool also, it seems there are certain types of humor or certain types of activities that are fun, you know, that really help teach concepts better than just, you know, getting up there and lecturing. It's certainly preferable to that, and the students enjoy it more, and I have the anecdotal feeling that, you know, it just they understand it better after an activity like that. And so engagement and then as a teaching tool would be my main two. And I like to I guess for myself that's a bit of a motivation too. I get bored if I don't do stuff like that.
Right.
So.
Okay. I did see another question. You've already mentioned that the graduate students are a little bit more serious. So what about the undergrads? Now, there's I guess there's three different sections that I want to cover here. So the intro in-class one,
mm-hmm.
the online one, and then the upper-level undergraduate ones. How do those students respond? Are they similar? Are they different to the cartoons that you use or the videos that you mostly use for the online class? How is their response to that those activities?
I would say generally positive with almost all of the students. I have noticed just there are kind of personality traits that tend to be common among certain majors of students and things like the education students really enjoy anything related to, you know, especially the elementary ed. Ladies really love anything having to do with early childhood and humor associated with that. They thought that stuff was hilarious. And then the computer science students, I try to put in a lot of techie humor, and they like that. The pre-med are maybe a little bit more serious. And I had one student that told me, you know, with regard to, like, answering questions outside of class, that they wanted to make sure that they got points for it because they can't waste any time because they have all, you know, their day very structured to make sure they get into medical school. So they're these very highly motivated and driven students that tend to think, oh, it's a waste of time if I'm not getting a grade for it kind of attitude.
Right. So you recognize that the different majors kind of have a different response to these. So
absolutely.
You do consider that as you find, say, a cartoon. Do you look at it and say, all right, it's going to work with this group but not that group?
Yeah. Like, I found these funny stat videos online. They're on YouTube, and they all have Japanese anime characters in them, and the computer scientists love them because they're all into anime stuff. And they just loved those, but I think it would totally get lost on the elementary ed teachers. I don't think they would have any interest, nor would they understand the humor of the videos. And so I wouldn't ever use them with that group. But like I said, a lot of them are already teaching, so they really loved the funny examples from teaching and things.
All right. I think that is all the questions that I had. And I'm looking through just one more time so I don't miss anything. But as I'm looking through, I just wanted to thank you very much for your time and
sure.
allowing me to ask you these questions about the use of fun in your classroom. And I think it's going to be really helpful to us to try to encourage more of that use in well, actually, the group that I'm with, we think that it actually is beneficial. As you said, do you have anecdotal evidence that it is a good teaching tool? So we believe the same. So hopefully this will, again, help us help others start doing something similar in their classes. I'm looking at I don't have anything else here that I can see. But I do want to just, thinking about it, just to make sure that the online class with 60 students, how much do you get them to respond? So they go to a blog, whatever you said, a discussion board.
It was a discussion board, yeah.
Right. They go to that. How many of them go and respond after they watch the video? Is it a large
All one? Of them are required to do it, and I actually assign participation points in the course and reviewed whether or not they had contributed to their discussions on that. So I kind of felt the need to assign a lot of piddly points here and there with the online course only to really motivate participation with that, because there is just my experience with online is if you don't assign points to it, they just don't do it because you're kind of out of sight and they don't remember and don't care anymore. And so I kind of they had two discussions every week, and usually one of them was kind of humor-based in some way. And the other one would maybe be, you know, read this research article and, you know, discuss these questions, kind of more serious task.
Okay. And then, so if they're required to respond, do you look at the quality of the response? Did you look at them and say, they really got the idea here from that video, or they're just responding just to get those points?
I would view the responses, and when I would see responses that were either wrong, like I did on a particular post, I would come in and interject my opinion and try to direct them a little bit. Or if I just saw a student that maybe I'd let them get by 1 week with giving a silly, you know, non-thoughtful response to it. But if I saw that more than, you know, two times or more, I'd send them an email and say, you're going to be losing your participation points because you're not putting the work into these responses that's expected.
Okay.
And so I did monitor. I told them that I was spot checking, and I really did kind of spot check. There was no way I could grade all of them, but I did spot check, and I would show up in the middle of a discussion, and they all knew at any time I could show up, and so they kind of stayed on their toes to some extent because of that.
Now, there's no, and I'm sorry, I'm asking these questions going
That's
a little
okay.
longer. They're able to have a discussion, a long, whatever kind of discussion from that. They're able to continue that on their own. I'm not even sure what I'm trying to ask.
The required post, would they continue? Or
Yes. I mean, so is there...
Yeah, sometimes. There was one cell phone video that really intrigued the students a lot, and it was the one I mentioned that was ridiculous. It was just these crazy claims made about cell phone radiation and, you know, quoting statistics from the 1800s and comparing it to today and so on. And it got, I mean, students went on and on and on and on talking about it because they were just completely intrigued by the subject.
Right.
And it was, I had moved on since. I hadn't even looked at the boards, but they kept showing up in my box as new discussion posts on the same old board from the week before. But that was the only one that just kind of went on and on and on.
Why do you think? Was that something, there's a reason for that as opposed to the other videos?
It freaked them out, I think. And they were kind of freaked out by the whole cell phone radiation thing. And it was just starting to hit the news at that time, and
right. They
were all scared.
Okay.
That was all it was. And then I tried to go in there and quell their fears and point out all the errors made in the
right. Video
and so on.
So their responses were more on the content of not the statistics.
Yeah. It was of concern to them on a personal level, what was said. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's all the questions that I have. Again, I just wanted to thank you very much for your willingness to spend this hour with me talking about what you do in the classroom.
Sure.
And I'm going to put your name in for the $25 gift certificate that we're going to randomly choose someone who has participated in these interviews.
So okay.
We'll let you know when that happens, and hopefully you will be chosen, but I can't guarantee that.
One chance out of N, huh?
Right.
So, I'm happy to help out, and good luck with your project.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Please stand by.